It's Monday, and it's time to take a look at the week ahead and give you the agenda, the rundown of things you might need to pay attention to this week. And we're joined by Christine Fair, professor at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University, and Charlie Herman, economics editor for The Takeaway and WNYC Radio. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Christine, let me begin with you, because tomorrow is obviously a very important anniversary, a year since Osama bin Laden died in that raid in Pakistan. And I wonder, what do you think has changed, perhaps more significantly, either between the U.S. relationship with Pakistan or what effect that raid had on the war in Afghanistan?
Well, boy, that's a tough one, because in terms of the U.S. relationship with Pakistan, the way in which the bin Laden raid was conducted was really symptomatic of the fact that no one here thought that we could trust the Pakistanis, that there was the chance that they would give him a heads up if they were brought into any way, shape, or form in the planning loop of the operation. So in some sense, the way in which that operation was conducted was directly a result of the relationship that we've had with the Pakistanis and the growing frustration over it over the course of the past 10 years. Since then, things have really only gone downhill. We are, and of course, it's very much tied to what's going on in Afghanistan. I mean, we are really trying to find some way of minimizing our active counterinsurgency footprint, trying to transition to a longer-term, more sustainable footprint in Afghanistan. And yet our ability to do that is tied directly to the Pakistanis and their continued insistence upon harboring the very entities such as the Haqqani Network, various aspects or various subgroupings of the Taliban that are, in fact, responsible for killing our troops. And so then this brings back into the discussion the use of drones. And the drones went from being a collaborative tool that the Pakistanis would actually provide us substantial intelligence on various hits to really being one of, we're going to go this alone if you're not going to participate in this. And so what we've really seen over the last year since the bin Laden raid is just a complete deterioration of U.S.-Pakistan relations. And quite frankly, I really see the U.S. and Pakistan on a collision course, not on a collaborative course.
So what did the raid on Osama bin Laden accomplish? Obviously, take down an extraordinarily high-value target for the U.S. Did it make the United States safer, or did it improve, perhaps, our fight against terrorism worldwide?
Well, okay, so, and this is very clear, this is where the limits of my expertise really kick in. So some people are alleged al-Qaeda experts. I'm a South Asianist, and so I look at al-Qaeda within the lens of the South Asia region. What had been the case for a very long time is that al-Qaeda had largely been chased out of Afghanistan. It had traditionally been based in the Kunar, Nuristan area. Sometimes it would pop up in places like Kunduz, but mostly in the north. And the reason why they had been chased out of Afghanistan is because they were ensconced in Pakistan. Now, that does remain the case where there are al-Qaeda remnants. There are far more of them in Pakistan than in Afghanistan. And it's also during a time when the Pakistanis, just like the Americans, are really tired of this war that they've been in. They don't think that they're getting out of it what they should be getting out of it, commensurate with the risk and commensurate with the problems that this war has brought upon themselves. But in terms of the operational capabilities of al-Qaeda, you know, I'm really not I don't want to be on that gravy train, because it is a gravy train that says al-Qaeda, you know, Osama bin Laden is dead, but al-Qaeda is not dead. I know that there are still low-level planning, but I tend to see the terrorism threat coming out of South Asia is really moving beyond al-Qaeda. For example, Lashkar-e-Taiba has really stepped up its game in the last decade. And we have this continuing problem of people in the diaspora here in the United States, Europe, or elsewhere that radicalize here for a variety of reasons and continue to go to places like Pakistan,
albeit
increasingly Yemen and Somalia for training.
And I know this discussion will also continue tomorrow on the actual anniversary of Osama bin Laden's death, but tomorrow is also May Day here in the United States, and we're expecting protests all around the country. People are wondering if the Occupy movement will once again become a physical occupation. But Charlie, you're actually seeing the influence of this movement inside the buildings on Wall Street.
Well, you're seeing a lot more shareholder activism in the annual meetings that are going on right now. Just a couple weeks ago, you had shareholders basically reject the pay package that was put together for Citigroup CEO and executives. You see situations where Goldman Sachs is having their annual meeting in a couple weeks. An investor fund has basically said, we are opposed to this person that you're nominating to be on the board. You're seeing sort of more actions by shareholders questioning some decisions that companies are making. And it's an interesting development that you have the protests outside the doors and you have some action going on inside. Now, whether or not that's long term, whether or not it really does effectuate change, or it's just something in the moment that we're in right now, I'd sort of put it, if there's a word for the week or for the month or for this year, would be accountability, this idea of trying to get the companies to behave in certain ways, whether that's protests from the outside or from the inside. And what's interesting is you're starting to see this development of a lot of companies, especially tech companies, but some other ones as well, that are trying to limit the ability of shareholders to really have a voice.
Google, oh, interesting.
Google, for example, is releasing additional shares to the public, but it doesn't have a vote. So you can have, you know, an investment in the company, but you don't actually get a say on how they run it.
Proactively clamping down on protests.
You know, the idea of one share, one vote, you know, they don't want that idea because they say, oh, Wall Street, you're not focused on the long term. We're focused on the long term.
Right.
We want to look ahead. But so there's some interesting developments that are happening there.
All right. So that, those are both things that are happening tomorrow. But let's look ahead to Friday because many people are expecting the April jobs report perhaps to be a little better than it was last week?
A little better than what we saw last month. We've seen some consistent unemployment claims on a weekly basis have been going up, and that's made people a little bit worried that this number may not be that great. I mean, it'll just clearly be a lot of attention focused. The estimates are anywhere from like 160,000, 170,000 jobs created, that the unemployment rate will remain unchanged or maybe even go up a little bit. I mean, the worry here is if it goes down significantly or is very low, is the economy starting to stall again? This would be the third year in a row where that sort of thing happens. If the number is higher or if last month's number is revised upwards, then it actually gives some strength that the economy is strengthening and continuing on a strong path.
And okay, well, we'll see when that comes out on Friday. Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and WNYC, and Christine Ferris, professor at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University. Happy Monday, and thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.